When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Right off the bat, there's Lyle Thompson.
Kylie O'Miller showing off those shifty skills.
Driver driving hard down the alley, and he scores.
What a goal from Josh Bird.
Kayla Trainer slips and scores.
You're kidding me.
By Dylan Ward.
Gets topside. Rambo scores.
Welcome to Pro Lacrosse Talk, your go-to podcast for interviews with professional players, coaches, and executives, as well as the latest news and analysis from all three professional lacrosse leagues. Now, here's your host, Hutton Jackson.
What's up, Pro Lacrosse fans? Welcome to another edition of Pro Lacrosse Talk presented by Fanatics. Today's episode is airing live on Twitter Spaces. We plan to do more of these type of episodes. We did one recapping the PLL draft and previewing the PLL season. Now we're 1 week under our belts in the PLL, so we're going to talk about week one in the PLL, as well as the NLL Finals, which had its first game of the series as well. I'm your host, Hutton Jackson. Today I'm joined by PLT contributors Parker Blake, Topher Adams, Matt Bergnati, and we're going to be joined by Charlie White shortly as well. I didn't realize that, Matt, you actually were 2021 PLL All-Stars Skills Competition judge, so we have a competition judge in our midst. And this is his first time hopping on for us. But first off, welcome you guys. Thank you guys for joining me today. You know, we're going to get into the PLL a little bit, but I want to start with the NLL because the NLL actually had a ripple effect kind of going into the PLL. We were missing some guys on the Chaos, some guys on the Archers, some guys on the Water Dogs, and Dylan Ward. So let's talk a little bit of NLL Finals. Buffalo Bandits, they win for game one against the Mammoth. It's a nail-biter. And Zed Williams, a guy missing his Whipsnakes game to play in the finals, had actually a huge game for the Mammoth. Mammoth seemed like they would have him on the ropes. Bandits would take a lead, and then they would relinquish that lead again, a large part to Zed Williams, who I was surprised that the Bandits didn't do more to prevent him. And, you know, he didn't have a terrific year in the NLL. He's kind of been spotty here and there, but they're letting him get one-on-one matchups and just dodging people. So surprised they let that happen, but Bandits end up scoring on a breakaway goal and putting it away in front of the Banditland crowd. Topher, I'll start with you. You watched the game. What kind of are your thoughts from Buffalo? And now that it's a three-game series, so short series in the NLL, but do you think they win game two on the road in Colorado, or do you think maybe Colorado forces a game three?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the atmosphere in Banditland on Saturday. That's one of the best lacrosse environments you'll ever see anywhere at any time. It was ridiculous. It was definitely a heavyweight fight that you'd want in a final setting, you know, really competitive, high scoring, like the kind of game that you want to introduce people to lacrosse with. You know, Buffalo, they've been the team all season long. You know, they kind of showed it this past game. They had Josh Byrne and Dane Smith, both big games. You know, their big two-headed monster really showed up big. You know, they had the clutch goal late to win the game. I don't know if they get it done in the Loud House out in Denver this week, but, you know, they're definitely, I feel confident saying that they're the favorite, even on the road. But if, you know, Zed goes off again or, you know, something happens, I could absolutely see this being pushed all the way to a three-game series, even though Buffalo are definitely the favorites in my eyes.
You know, and it's interesting, too, with the NLL. It's almost like, you know, if you're a Bandit fan, you kind of want to see them win back at home. But you don't want it to go to a game three. So that's always kind of interesting as well. And, yeah, it's funny because Buffalo has been this juggernaut all season. But they've really squeaked out these close games. I mean, Toronto series could have easily gone the other way. You could have seen Toronto win in both those games. You know, they had the pipe that hit with 8 seconds left in game one. Then they had the goal that counted that didn't count because it was a couple milliseconds after the buzzer in game two. So they had a straw into the stick, and then here you got the Mammoth that we have a chance to win, and you know, they give up that turn, they turn the ball over, and Buffalo goes in transition, Weiss gets that goal, and they end up going ahead and eventually winning. And it was kind of ironic too that that's how Buffalo won, because we're used to Buffalo just scoring these ridiculous, like, highlight reel goals. I mean, you know, you look at Tejada, like, you look at Tejada Nanacoke and how well he played in this game, 7 points, I believe, in this game. Grew up a Buffalo fan, talked about that when he joined us on the podcast, just, you know, his love for his head coach now, John Tavares, and growing up just dreaming about these moments, and he showed out. So, you know, it's really interesting just to me that that's how Buffalo won and they were able to hang on. So I'm going to need to see more from the defense. I didn't really think Matt Vince played poorly in this game. I just think that defense kind of let him out to dry. Like I said, Zed Williams' goals weren't anything that impressive to me personally. But he kept them in this game. Unfortunately, they fell a little bit short. Dylan Ward played decent in cage as well. But it's going to be interesting to see. I honestly think Mammoth maybe get it done in game two. I don't see Buffalo losing this, you know, two games in a row after what we've seen. They've been a team too that when they have lost games, they've bounced back the week after. So I expect them to finish out this series. I just don't know if we will get a game two or game three. Anybody else have any thoughts, Parker? Matt, you guys got any thoughts on the NLL finals, or are you kind of ready to talk some PLL?
I think they're taking a lot of players out of the PLL for two more weeks.
They are. We hopefully won't get much overlap like we did this year. I thought 2019 worked out really, really well, where there wasn't an overlap. So I would like that to go back to that. But, we'll see how things go moving forward. But, let's get into the PLL. We'll go around the horn and just give our initial reactions, hot takes, quick reactions to week one. I'll start with you, Parker.
I think everyone knows that the Atlas kind of came out and were the big dog this week. You can't short Lyle for what he did, but I mean, the three-headed monster that Atlas has created is going to be terrible to deal with this year. And I mean, as a Redwoods fan, we had a shitty week, but I have to say that Jewel stepping in for Pinnell was kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, my big reaction is just, you know, how close all the teams are in this league. You know, a team like the Water Dogs, we all assume, is a title caliber team with a really balanced roster, and they get absolutely walked, you know, in the first half against Cannons, who were the second worst team in the league last year. And then Chrome against Archers, you know, Chrome were really terrible most of last season. Archers are really good. And you see it kind of flips the script in week one. So it just kind of shows you, like, when the talent level is this high, it goes down to, like, the little details, an injured player here or there, a little bit of execution. There's those tiny margins and how huge of a difference they make in this league.
No, absolutely. And that's why I kind of stayed off, you know, betting wise from picking a side other than the Whips game. And I ended up getting a bet home because I took them on the money line early. But the pick that I gave out, Whips -1.5, didn't actually pan out. So, again, it's very tough to play sides. And if you guys are interested in betting, we'll have some more betting content for you at BattleCross later in the week. So definitely check out that Twitter space. Matt, any quick reactions? Do you see any highlight worthy, you know, top 10, goals this season or this opening week? Any quick reactions to week one?
Well, I was actually at all four of the games this weekend. It was actually a great atmosphere. The fans really showed up, and I thought it was a really, really great time. I was super, super impressed with the Chrome. I think the Chrome, they're not the Chrome of last year. These guys are the real deal. I remember I was watching them warm up, and they had so much more energy than the Archers, and they just really impressed me. And I think that the Chrome are the real deal this year. That's my hot take.
No, I like that hot take a lot. I had the pleasure of interviewing some of them and Coach Sudan for an article that's coming out shortly. And you can just tell that they're really not happy with how the last three seasons have gone. I even talked to them a little bit about, oh, you know, you guys had a good 2020. What can you take from that? And like Jordan McIntosh was like, we won, you know, three or four games. Lost first round of the playoffs, like, not much that we can take from 2020. You can tell they're just not happy. And, you know, this core, you know, they lost a lot of guys, obviously, due to retirement, but of McIntosh, Rannigan, even though he was a healthy scratch, and even, you know, Jesse Bernhardt stepping in, a few years ago, these veterans, like, they want to win. They know that they can win, and they had a lot of the young guys step up and guys that, you know, were only on the team for a little bit last season, and like Dylan Malloy, who had a big game. I like that hot take, and I think the Chrome are going to be the real deal, and I think, you know, we're going to see them surprise some people this season. We'll go to you, Charlie, for the last hot take, quick reaction from week one. What were your thoughts?
For as much like attention as the like attack and like defense get, I think short stick DMs run the league. I think if you have short sticks that don't get beat one-on-one, aren't liabilities that you don't have to slide to, that's going to help your defense a lot. Because sliding, obviously, you see all these players are so good at passing and finding open skip lanes that if you're sliding early and often, they're going to find those skip lanes no matter who you're playing. It doesn't matter if it's who you think is the worst team in the league or the best team in the league. So teams like the Chrome, the Atlas, who have short sticks that can match up one-on-one with anyone. Like you saw the Chrome short sticks go against Tom Schreiber and pretty much like holding the no points. You have that, and then you can push transition with those guys. They're not liabilities in transition. Like you normally in college, you have your shorties who just like play defense, get the ball to the attack, run off. If your shorties can stay on the field for the first 10, 15 seconds of the shot clock and create offense like the Atlas did, it's over for other teams. So I think short stick D middies, they need to get love too. I think they're the reason that teams are winning at this moment in the PLL.
No, I like that a lot. And my hot take was, or not hot take, but quick reaction, because it's very cold take at this point, was that the Atlas are the real deal. But we're going to talk enough Atlas, I think, later. And so to your point with the short stick defensive middies, yeah, I think the Chrome's group is impressive. We already knew Will Haas healthy is going to be great. So is Tarasenko. Mike Messinger, despite the little blunder at the end, you know, drawing that penalty, that was a huge mistake, and they're lucky that they escaped unscathed because of that. They did give up a goal there. But, you know, he plays transition in the NLL for the Saskatchewan Rush, and he looked great out there on defense, had a goal, backdoor cut from Salama to give them that go-ahead that gave them that goal cushion that they ended up needing when he took that penalty. So he was impressive. They also got Pat Aslanian, who didn't dress. He's another really capable short stick defensive midi if any of those guys do go down or they need another depth add there for whatever reason. So yeah, I think the Chrome's group is very strong. I think Atlas has a strong group, like you said. I think the Whipsnakes, you know, I think they're strong now that they got Ty Warner back. I think it's going to take them a little bit more time to kind of get comfortable, but I think that's a very good point. And then you look at the Water Dogs, you know, sure, they got guys like Courier who can play both ways. Conrad can play both ways. But they were missing Steven DiNapoli. That was a big loss for them. And I think you saw them kind of struggle a little bit too with some of these matchups. You know, you had Asher Nolting had a good two-man game going with Lyle. And, you know, we're going to get into that a little bit later. But I do think there's some credit to that because in this league, there's so many offensive talent that if they're drawing a short stick matchup, you want to make sure you're comfortable in that short stick defensive midi. So I think that's a very good point by you. But we'll start off with that first game. We alluded to it a little bit with the Whips Chaos. Chaos missing a bunch of key guys. You had Ian McKay, who had that go-ahead assist for the Bandits. You had Chris Cloutier, had a nice wraparound goal. Josh Byrne was doing some highlight goals. Dane Smith. Max Adler, I think, was the key loss as well for them. Despite that, Chaos went up 6-2. Start this game. It took a little while for the Whipsnakes defense to wake up, but I thought once they did settle down, they played pretty well, and Bernlor looked like his old self. But let's start with you, Topher. Thoughts on the Whipsnakes and Chaos? You got any thoughts on you know, how this game kind of turned out? It was a low-scoring affair, no surprise with Blaze in net, but any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I got a couple things. I mean, first off, I think it was a really fantastic defensive performance from both teams, really. Especially a lot of on-ball guys did really well. I think this big highlight on-ball defensive performance was Jared Newman, who really locked down Matt Rambo for most of the game, kind of silenced what he could do. But really none of the Whipsnakes' attack did all that much, except Chanichuk, who obviously had the game winner, and I think he had a hat trick as well. I think another big takeaway for me, though, was Chaos and their replacements on offense. I think the first half, it looked like it'd be smooth sailing. You know, the guys looked pretty well. There was that nice goal with Palasek, the BTB to Wasserman with a little cross crease pass to Voigt. So for a while, it looked like these guys would be just fine, like no worries at all. But I think as the game went on, you could just tell, like, the drop-off in quality from the Bandit guys and some of those really high-level players to kind of a Wasserman guy who's more on the bubble of a roster. Like, that talent gap really started to show as the game went on, trying to go up against, you know, Matt Dunn and Michael Earhart, all these dudes. Earhart, by the way, was insane in this game as well. But you know, I think that level of quality, that drop off really showed towards the end of the game. And that's why, you know, Whipsnakes were able to come back in the second half.
Yeah, and we'll go to you, Charlie, because I know you kind of have similar thoughts on, you know, the Whips offense kind of going through a lull for a little bit, but also, you know, the Chaos defense, you know, really taking it to them that first half.
Yeah, I think that without Zed Williams, obviously he's a huge loss. He's probably, I'd say, their best player on offense. But they're too one-dimensional without him. I think having Gutterding and Rambo, both lefty dominant attackmen, playing on the field at the same time kind of made it easy for the Chaos, because the Chaos, you just saw the defenders just baiting them to go right the entire time, shutting off the left hands. Basically, if Rambo's not getting to his left and Gutterding's not getting to his left, then they have really no dodging threats outside of Brad Smith. But you saw that the Chaos was throwing Jack Rellet on Brad Smith and throwing a shorty on Jay Carlson. And Jay Carlson, for as good as he is, he's not built as much of a dodger. He did have that one goal where he did a swim move on the shorty. But I think with Zed there, you get another dimension. You get a guy who can get to all of his spots, get to 5-5, 7-7, doesn't even need space to operate, really. So I think that he changed the entire math of the defense. The Chaos defense is for real, too. Like, Brett Kennedy, Jared Newman, Jack Rellet is, like, as scary a combo as I guess you can say in the entire league. They thrive on playing defense where they don't have to slide very often. They just win their one-on-one matchups, which is obviously what they're doing all day against the Whips. And if in this league, I was kind of alluding to with the shorties, if you don't have to slide to guys, it's going to be hard for offense to score goals. So I think the Chaos defense, they're the real deal. And as soon as they get their starting guys back, they're going to be another like serious threat to go back-to-back. So that's the takeaways I got.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we mentioned replacement players. I was pretty impressed with Tommy Kelly, you know, getting back in the Chaos lineup, you know, doing a good job against Joe Nardella, because I really thought that was going to be a big weakness for the Chaos. That was part of what I thought would, you know, really be their Achilles heel. And he ended up doing pretty well at the stripe, serviceable for them. And, you know, they just ended up letting the Whips go on a little bit of a run, you know, in that second half, and kind of tried to claw their way back a little bit. You know, you had it tied up at one point, thanks to Mac O'Keefe, you know, looked really great. But I do think the Whips, this was an interesting game. I think both offenses, you know, really did struggle, because despite Chaos going up that 6-2, you know, they had two pointers to get there. So I think it was a little bit of, you know, misconception there. But I think if you're the Chaos, you're happy with how this defense played. And sure, you're, you know, it's tough to lose. You never want to lose a game, especially the opening weekend. But when you're missing four of your five offensive starters, and then your top faceoff man, and then a versatile, you know, short stick, defensive mini, pole, offensive mini, whatever you want Ian McKay to be, whatever you need him to be, when you're missing those six guys, I mean, and you still come away with just a one goal loss, got to be pretty happy for your coach, Andy Towers. And I'm sure he's hoping for a Bandits victory this week so he can get those guys back in week three. But we'll move on now to Atlas Redwoods. This game got a lot of fanfare because I think we all were expecting the Atlas to come out hot. I don't know if we expected them to look this crisp as they did, but we'll go to you, Parker. Thoughts on this, because I know you are a Redwoods fan. What do you think of this game? You know, both pros and cons of watching your Redwoods lose.
No, that one hurt, man. I'm not gonna lie, that one really hurt. But I mean, I'd rather lose somebody like that, like the Atlas could come out. But we looked sloppy though. The Redwoods were really sloppy on D, and really just didn't get the offensive production that I thought they would. Really, the only highlight was Jules playing X, but that's pretty much all I saw that I was happy about that game. Hoping we come back against the Chrome, but it's not going to be very fun either. So.
Yeah, that'll be a good game. I think it's going to be interesting just to see how, you know, this Redwoods offense kind of bounces back against the Chrome defense. It looked pretty solid. You had similar sentiments, Topher. So kind of talk to me what you saw from the Redwoods defense that was, you know, kind of a head scratcher. We thought they were going to perform a little bit better. And sure, give Atlas offense credit. There's a lot of talent on that roster, but not their best effort.
Yeah, no, I think this was a really poor performance and really just a poor matchup for Redwoods defense. I think they were getting picked apart off ball, a lot of open shots for, you know, Chris Gray and Jeff Teat. Obviously those guys are great, and, you know, playing with guys like Eric Law, they're going to be a lot of high opportunities, but I think there was a lot of poor play off ball and a lot of undisciplined play at times. And really some of these Redwoods defensive issues have been quietly lurking under the surface for a while now. Josh Schaefer from the PLL in an article last week point out the Redwoods had the second worst defense per possession in terms of points allowed per other opposing team's offensive possessions in the league last season. You know, that kind of got hidden a little bit because T.D. Erland wins two-thirds of his faceoffs more often than not. But I think in this game, when Trevor Baptiste was so dominant, it really showed just how poor Redwoods defense can be at times. And I think we might see some changes moving forward. You know, obviously John Sexton at LSM being injured is an enormous loss, kind of an underrated loss because he's one of the best purely defensive LSMs in the world. But I could see potentially some changes in personnel to try and solve some issues, maybe put Epple at LSM to kind of let him roam more, doesn't have the responsibility of going up against the Jeff Teat type of player, maybe move Arden Cohen down to close because he actually did fairly well at LSM, but that's just not his natural area of the field. And so some changes need to be made. And obviously, you know, week one against that attack line is not a great way to start things with a new kind of revamped defensive unit, but a lot of changes need to come in terms of execution and potentially personnel.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised if they do try to move Cohen a little bit around. And, you know, to the point, I know the Redwoods are a little bit more established, but we did see the Water Dogs go through a lot of different rotations of defensive personnel the first couple weeks till they finally found the one that they fit. You know, they had Burns running at LSM, didn't even play Randall in week one. And then they kind of switched up a little bit, found Gobrick, Randall, and Burns as the line that worked for them. And obviously they didn't have a great showing this week, but worked for them well last year. So I kind of agree with that. You might see a little bit of shuffling. Matt, I know you want to talk a little bit about the Atlas short stick defensive middies and how their defense played. So I'll let you, you know, kind of touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, I was super impressed with Peter Darth, Danny Logan. I think those guys are the best short stick defensive midfield unit in the league. And I think that, you know, Charlie was talking about how important it is, and the Atlas have the best unit in the league. And it helps your entire defense, and your defense is only as good as your weakest link. If you have a short stick D midi out there who's just not very good, constantly losing his one-on-one matchup, then your defense is going to slide. They're going to struggle because the players in the PLL, you know, they're so talented, so gifted that they can find those skip passes when the slide's coming. So when you don't have to slide, it creates a great defense. So those short stick defensive middies were so impressive to me. And I'm a face-off guy. I absolutely loved watching this face-off battle too between Baptiste and Erland. You know, they were the two best last year. I think they were both at 65%. Also, on a side note, I think the Redwoods would have been the Whip Snakes last year if Erland wasn't hurt. But yeah, I love that face-off matchup. And Baptiste had a great day against him. And I didn't think he'd be as dominant as he was. And it was just awesome to see. But when Baptiste plays like he does, and if he's doing that against Erland, he could do that against everyone in the league and even better than that. So I think that the Atlas are so scary.
That two bomb from Baptiste either.
Yeah, that was the confidence to take that too. You know, making him a threat on offense is definitely scary. And we know we didn't even talk really about this attack line. So Charlie, I'll let you wrap up this game with talking about this offense that we saw of the Gray, Teat, and Law lineup.
Yeah, everyone always likes to talk about Teat and Chris Gray as like these like crazy dodgers, which obviously they're very good at dodging, but they're like the most unselfish and best off-ball attack unit in the entire league. Like Eric Law, like you saw a couple of his goals where he was just in the right spot at the right time. Gray and Teat did all the work. There was one where Gray, I think, no-looked him. He looked at Teat the entire time, and then Law was just open wide backside. But all three of those guys just seem to be in the right spot every single time, no matter what. And for them to be that good, like that cohesive after just, you know, 3-4 days of practice together is very scary. I think we touched on the Atlas, like how scary they are at all positions of the field. But the Redwoods, to me, they just look way too robotic on all sides of the field. Like, it seems like they were taught a defense like the first year in the league, and they kind of stuck to that defense the entire time. Like, they got a lot of talent, and everyone always talks about that. Everyone's like, oh, the Redwoods have probably one of the most talented rosters in the league. How come they've, you know, fallen on their face in the playoffs every single year? Well, it's because of stuff like that. Like, they're going to slide regardless. They're switching everything. Like, there was times where – a lot more times than there should have been where shorties were just on Jeff Teat and Chris Gray, and that's you're asking to get goals scored on you at that point. So I think they got to play a little more free, a little less, like, stagnant on defense. Another thing they weren't getting on hands of Teat, Gray, Law, Costabile, all those guys. They were just letting them kind of sit back and dissect the entire defense. So they need to switch that up sooner rather than later, or else they're going to start getting blown out by teams that can pass the ball well.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad we're giving Eric Law some love, because I know there was some talk, you know, and this is no disservice to Caraway, who was a healthy scratch, because I think he's a top player too, but people saying that they should have rolled out a line of Caraway, Gray, and Teat are missing the impact that that Eric Law has on this offense as an off-ball threat. Like, you know, you have two quarterbacks balanced in the field. You don't need another ball-dominant attackman. You need a guy finishing around, and Eric Law is the best off-ball attackman we have seen this past decade. He did it with the Outlaws, won three championships with them. He's doing it on the Atlas, you know, now seeing, having these two complementary pieces. And like you said, you know, Jeff Teat and Chris Gray, they're not just Dodgers. They're off-ball guys too. They're selfless. They throw great skip passes and stuff too. So yeah, this is one of the things where like everyone's talking about the Atlas offense, like, oh, looks unstoppable. Like, I don't think this is a knee-jerk reaction to week one. I think this is a lot more to come from this going forward. And I think they're beatable still. You know, it's the PLO. Anybody can win any given day. But, you know, I got my Atlas future in this weekend right after that because I think their value is going to decrease pretty quickly. I think they look great, and I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon. But we'll move on now to Water Dogs Cannons. This one was a little bit interesting. A lot of people were, you know, and the Water Dogs thought they would win. They were the favorites going in this game. Cannons came out and kind of punched them in the mouth a little bit to start. They had a better second half, but it was definitely the Cannons show for the first half. I'll go back to you, Charlie. You know, talk a little bit about you know, the X factor in this game between the Cannons and the Water Dogs.
Well, the biggest thing for the Cannons right away is they were pushing transition like early and often. The Water Dogs were getting a lot of easy shots, not easy shots. Nick Morocco, the goalie for the Cannons, getting a lot of easy saves. And he was making some great outlet passes too, which led to easy transition. And for as good as the Water Dogs defense is, if you're letting fast break opportunities go every time that other team has the ball, they're going to score on you eventually. And the Cannons were shooting like 80% right off the bat. So that was probably the biggest reason the game got out of hand so quickly. But the reason like the Water Dogs weren't really able to come back, because obviously Nick Morocco, I think he was the best player on the field this weekend. He made some great saves, but they just get too stagnant when Sauer's the ball on a stick on offense. I think they just kind of it's like that thing in 2K where you're just like, oh, I'll give it to LeBron and let him cook. Like, no, like you got to actually move off ball. Sauer is one of the best dishers in the PLO, so you got to let him dodge, find open space, and he'll find you. But I saw a lot of people just standing around not really doing anything, which obviously Sauer's is really good, but he's going to get slid to every so often. So I think that's kind of the main point of emphasis, I would say, for the Water Dogs moving forward. The Cannons, obviously Lyle is incredible. When he hit his point prop in the first 8 minutes of the game, 3.5 points, he had 4 in the first 8 minutes. Water Dogs just let him get to his spots. Like 7-7 for Lyle is just automatic. He's going to either score or assist every single time he gets there. Towards the end of the game, he didn't really have any points because the Water Dogs were pressing him out. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact they were up by 6-7 goals at a time, so he didn't really need to press anything. But if you want to like stop this Cannons offense, you're going to need to make it hard for Lyle to actually do Lyle things. They got a lot of contributions from other guys. Ryan Jenner played great. Rafis didn't really unlock himself yet, which is kind of scary because Rafis is probably one of their best Dodgers. But yeah, the Cannons are just very well coached. They're very disciplined. They move the ball well. When Morocco's playing like that, they're going to be a tough team to beat no matter who they play. But the one thing I will say, that defense is the biggest worry for me before the season started. We didn't see much of that defense have to play a lot of 6-on-6 because the Water Dogs tried to match pace early on. So that's one thing I'd look for in the Atlas game. I think they can be a lot more 6-on-6 opportunities. And if they can hold up against the Atlas, then they can be as dangerous a team as any in this league. But that's the big thing I'm looking for.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I thought the Cannons looked great in that first half. But I do think Water Dogs kind of played in their hand a little bit. They were very sloppy on offense. We saw they came out in the second half, ended up, you know, going on 6-4 run in that second half. Wasn't enough to get the win. But in terms of, you know, both games, you know, we saw the Atlas win by 6. We saw the Cannons win by 6. I think that the Atlas his win was more impressive against the Redwoods than I would say the Canes against the Water Dogs. Unfortunately, Matt DeLuca didn't play too well in this game in place of Dylan Ward, but his defense didn't really help him out that much. And again, guarding Lyle Thompson, there was one goal where Lyle just did an amazing move on Burns. And, you know, all you can do is just put your hands up in the air if you're Burns. You know, you played as well as you could. I liked what I saw from the Canes. You know, I think they're going to be a chippy team that's going to really grind out some wins, kind of like they were last year. I thought Stephen Kelly looked really well, good, going up against Jake Withers. So I was very impressed with his play because, you know, he's hovered around that 50%, a little bit sub 50% the past couple seasons. That's kind of why he got dealt from the Archers. And Canes obviously viewed him as an upgrade, and I think he is an upgrade at the stripe for them. And Alex Woodall, too, if they decide to, you know, employ him as a two face-off system, I think he's a good combo to go with Stephen Kelly. And I love Fracaro is a great fit on this offense as well. But I do worry about the Canes a little bit. And I do think the Water Dogs, you know, if they can clean up the mistakes, I'd like to see maybe Sowers run out midfield again. Like, you know, I know you want Sowers on the field, but he played well in that semifinal game against the Whipsnakes. I think because he was getting the shorty matchups a little bit more and they were getting a little more creative, you know, they struggled with him in the lineup to start the season last year. And again, it's too early. Kind of, he hasn't played enough for us to kind of make these, you know, knee-jerk reactions to, I want to see him a little bit more on attack. But I don't think it's a bad idea to maybe move him around the field a little bit more, try some other things out, get a little bit more motion offense and get, you know, Ryan Brown in the shooting spaces. But that's kind of my reaction. I do think the Atlas win this game against Canes, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we get to our previews. But I do think that the Canes aren't necessarily super impressive after this. I think it was a good win for them. Still, you know, love Tyson Bell in the NLL. A little too undisciplined at playing the field. There's too much space for him to kind of overcommit sometimes. So that kind of worries me. I feel like the Atlas could kind of expose that. But we'll see what happens in week two. Then we'll go to the final game of the week. We'll recap, and then we'll go into our game. We'll go into fantasy, actually, and then we'll go into our game previews. But let's go Archers Chrome. I'll go to you, Matt, in this game. You know, you talked about how you really thought the Chrome looked dialed in. They obviously came away with a victory, holding on for dear life at the end there. But what do you see from this Chrome team that impressed you in week one?
I think that they always had a lot of energy, and now, you know, they're fully healthy. They got all their short stick D-middies back. You said Haas is back. He's a stud. They just – JT Giles Harris, he was super impressive. I think that now that they're healthy, they have their pieces, and they are like a complete team now because they were missing guys all over the place last year. So now that they're a full team, I think that they seem to have like a really good connection with each other, if that makes sense. Like when I was just watching them, they seem to just have a lot more energy. They seem to just like – they look like they're just having fun. Like the Archers, they like – in the pregame warmups, they were looking at what the Chrome were doing, which I thought was like really interesting. Like the Chrome would never look at the Archers. The Archers were looking at the Chrome. So that's when I knew like this was going to be a good game and the Chrome had a really good chance. But I just thought the Chrome were super impressive. I thought Connor Farrell played pretty well. He's got to get a little better with the ball on his stick. But I think that all those young guys on the Chrome on their offense, they're going to start piecing it together as the season goes on, as they get more comfortable in the PLL style, because obviously it's a lot faster than college. So, you know, guys like Nick Turn and Wisnowskis, they're going to get in their stride eventually. And they played well, but they haven't hit their potential, and that's the scary part. So I'm looking, like, towards the middle of the season, end of the year, when they hit their stride, I think there's going to be a really scary team.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, I feel like I'm a little biased because I've kind of slowly become a Chrome fan. I don't know, maybe I love the lovable losers or whatever. But now that they kind of look a little bit better going forward and haven't talked to, you know, some of them, it's interesting. Like a lot of these pieces are very complimentary. You talked about Nick Turn and Wisnowskis, you know, them landing both those guys in the draft was perfect for this offense. You fill that void with Wolf. You fill that void that you know, when you trade away Guddy. You have Dylan Malloy on that right side. He looked great. He looks like, you know, his former self, 2016 Tourton finalist, you know, that he was. And, you know, I overall, I thought the Chrome looked good. I think they have to be a little bit more disciplined down the stretch. But I thought it was a good showing from them. And really impressed with Sean Scannone as well. Not only him making, you know, I think 11 saves in this game, but his outlet passes looked good. He pushed in transition. And nice to see Jordan McIntosh, who I don't know if he's a new father just yet. Like, it sounds like he's pretty close. They might have had the baby right after that game. But he was very impressive in that win as well, one of the captains. Topher, I hope I didn't steal any of your thunder. I know you want to talk a little bit of Archers too, though. But what were your thoughts from this game and kind of what you saw from the Chrome winning and as well as the Archers, you know, their new pieces?
Yeah, quick final note on the Chrome. You know, it was kind of already mentioned, but like, I freaking loved watching JT Giles Harris out there. As far as like a pure 1v1 cover guy, like, he's going to make a case for best in the league in that role. Like, he can match feet with anybody. You know, he's super strong despite being a little bit shorter than a lot of defensemen. That dude's going to be a beast. I loved watching him, and he's going to solve so many defensive problems for Chrome by just being so good against guys. But, you know, kind of Archers, this was one of the worst performances we've seen from Archers in a little bit. I mean, especially compared to last season in the opener when they just blitzed Atlas like 18-6 and were just humming. And a lot of that is down to just Grant Ament is one of the five best players in the league, and he wasn't available, and that's obviously going to be a huge loss no matter what. But, you know, Tom Schreiber didn't do basically anything in this game. I don't even know if he had a point. Someone can check me, but I don't. He didn't do very much. You know, the defense, you know, was kind of sloppy, made some mistakes, and got in the penalty box a little bit. But I think one of the things I really liked was the rookie, Hopkins, Connor DeSimone, kind of playing in that midfield inverted role. And that's something that they really needed since 2019. You know, back in 2019, they had Christian Cuccinello and Joey Sankey, who they got in a trade from Redwoods, who would kind of be in that second midfield line and be able to invert and get their own shot, you know, create a goal by themselves at X. And, you know, they got Grant Ament to play primary at X, but they didn't have anybody else who could go behind the cage and get a goal. And he showed that. You know, he scored two goals that exact same way, just took a short stick behind the cage and toasted them. And having that kind of extra dimension to their offense could really unlock things for their kind of depth of scoring once Grant Ament comes back. But yeah, Archer's kind of struggled for me, but you know, once Ament gets back, maybe they'll kind of find their rhythm again.
Yeah, I think that definitely missed him. And you know, I thought that, you know, DeSimone looked really good for his debut. I thought Matt Moore was going to do a little bit more. I think it's going to take him a little bit more time to get comfortable. Schreiber did have one assist, but yeah, definitely not his greatest day. And I think I just saw a tweet by Joe Keegan that said 2 for 11 on assist opportunities that the Archers converted on. So there were some chances for Schreiber to get more points. His teammates just kind of let him down a little bit. But yeah, definitely not a good showing by them. I do think, you know, missing Ament hurts them. Connor Fields also, you know, missing him a little bit. He's playing with the Bandits in the finals. And then you have Warren Jeffrey playing with the Mammoth too, one of their starting defenders. They had, you know, three poles running in this game, and only two close defenders. So, you know, I think they're missing a little bit of some key pieces too. It's almost like, you know, we talk about how much the Chaos are missing, but even like one or two guys can make a big difference. You saw with the Water Dogs missing Ward. You saw that with Zed Williams' absence on the Whipsnakes. So, you know, when those guys get those guys back, it will definitely be a little bit more interesting to see how they do. But we also retreated this summer now to fantasy lacrosse. There's been some fantasy lacrosse challenges in the past. We did our own in 2019. We tried it with the NLL a little bit too. Finally, official fantasy game by the league, by the PLL. I'll turn it over to you, Parker, because you have our top stat leaders for this first week. Talk a little bit about who had the most points this week for player Royale and the PLL and your thoughts kind of on fantasy so far.
No, I enjoy the fantasy aspect of it, but I have to laugh because my first buddy that, like, we challenged each other, I guess, we set the exact same lineup, so we tied this week. So, hate that part, but I like the idea. But no, so the top five performers this week were Teat with 31 points, then Morocco came in at number two with 30. And then, like you were saying, Law had a huge impact. He had 29 points. Thompson had 28, and then Baptiste with 26 and 26 and a half-ish. Were kind of the top five guys out there. And then you had guys like Henningberg, who had four goals but fell out because he had three turnovers, and that really kills you. But the one that really jumped out to me was Salama from the Chrome? Yeah. But I mean, he had a stat in almost every single category because he had the two bomb, he had an assist, he had a cost turnover, had a ground ball just to do it. I mean, he filled out almost every category except giving up a turnover and getting a 1-point goal. So I do want to do a shout out to Blaze because Blaze is my man, always helps me catch my unders. And I really thought when he pulled out 18 points off of his 13 save game that he was going to be the goalie of the week, and then Morocco decided he wanted to be that guy. So, but yeah, no, I really love how they're doing it. I just hope it keeps going.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting too with the tier system because you'd think that you'd only be able to start like one tier one guy, but actually, like the most interesting thing is you start two tier ones, two tier twos, and that tier three is very key because those are the, you know, the lower tiers of these guys. Not that they're lower players, you can find a lot of value, but finding that guy, you know, like a Eli Salama, who's probably a tier three guy, but had a great week, that can really push you over the edge. But I know you had some thoughts as well, Topher.
Yeah, I think for me, some of the big takeaways are like which positions are kind of more favored in this fantasy scoring system. So to me, like defense, especially, and to a lesser extent, face-off guys are a much lower priority most more often than not with the way the fantasy system worked out. I mean, you saw the top scorers. There was like one guy in the top 10 who had a long pole, and it was Salama, you know. So I think it's really important to find value with defensive guys and face-off guys as opposed to putting those as your priority spots. Then on the flip side, you need one of the high-volume goalies like Blaze, like Nick Baracco, because when those guys get like 15-plus saves at, let's say, like 60% or so, like that's an absolute bomb in fantasy. So you absolutely need one of those high-volume goalies like a Blaze Reardon or a Nick Baracco.
Yeah, Matt, you know, let's talk a little bit offensive side a little bit. I know you have some thoughts on the face-off as well, but in terms of setting a fantasy lineup.
Yeah, so my biggest takeaway was I think you need to prioritize attackmen in the lineups. Like Jeff Teat, he had 31. Lyle had 28. Those are they are the top two MVP candidates, and they showed it in their fantasy games. I mean, in their fantasy game. So 6 of the 11 top performers were attackmen this week. So I think that just shows, like, you got to focus on the offense. And, you know, like Topher said, there's only one guy with a pole in the top 11. And it's just, you got to prioritize the attackmen. And then you got to try to look for poles who have the two-point threat in them. Because, you know, if you get a tier three defenseman who's a two-point threat and he hits a bomb, then he has a good week of fantasy, you know? And something I also thought was Baptiste, he had 26.6 points. You know, I know he had the assist to Teat, he had the 2-point goal, and he just played really well against TD Erland, who is the second best Fogo in the league. So if he can do that performance against TD, then he can do that against anyone or better, like I said earlier. So I think that Baptiste, he's a guy, if you want to prioritize Fogo, he's got to be like the top of the list. So I would probably use a tier one spot on him every single week, because if he's putting up those numbers against the second best Fogo, what's he going to do against the worst Fogo, you know? And he's also a transition threat, so he's going to get his points.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And to that point as well, you know, again, it's going to depend still a little bit on matchup. But I think for me, I started Nardella and I played the matchup thinking – he's going to go up against, you know, Tommy Kelly hasn't been, you know, played in a while. It's not Max Adler. And he didn't do as well. And a lot of it too had to do with volume. You know, obviously it was a low scoring game, so less opportunities for Nardella to get points. Whereas we know this Atlas offense is going to put up points no matter what. So that also makes Baptiste very advantageous because, you know, he's going to get a lot of face-offs attempts. So that's definitely something to consider. Not always based on, you know, looking at matchups. It's not bad to look at matchups, but you saw what Baptiste did even going against TD Erland, the top two face-off guys in the league. So definitely a good point by you guys. And that will wrap up our fantasy lacrosse focus section of the platform of the podcast. And then we'll move on to the game previews. And these will be a little bit quicker than our game recaps, but we'll start off with Chrome versus Redwoods. I'll go with you, Topher, to start. What are you kind of thinking in this game? Who do you like in this game? And what matchups are you kind of looking for?
Yeah, definitely looking to see what personnel looks like for Redwoods. Is Pinnell healthy? You know, he said that he came back later in the game, but is he fully healthy? Does Jewell stay at attack? Do they do that kind of pull rotation, moving Eppel to LSM, maybe moving Cohen down low? And then for Chrome, you know, can their offense move the ball a little better? You know, it was okay last game, but can it be a little better? And then what does Wisnowskis kind of have his breakout? You know, didn't do too much in week one, but that's kind of to be expected. He only had like one practice. So after a week to kind of settle in, does he have his breakout game? I expect Chrome to probably sneak out a win, but I think it'll be closer than the week one Redwoods game, definitely.
Yeah, no, tend to agree with that. I'm interested to see how the Chrome transition goes against the Woods. And, you know, if these Woods offensive middies and attackmen can really beat Chrome's short sticks. The one thing I will look for is, you know, are the Redwoods going to, again, prioritize the two ball a little bit, get their options there, and we'll see if Pinnell's healthy, because that's also a big reason whether this offense runs well or not. Go to KS Archers now. That's the next game. Charlie, we'll have you kind of preview that one a little bit. You know, this is obviously the game that's been the Achilles heel for the Archers for quite some time, knocked them out of the playoffs the past two seasons. Thoughts on this game?
This game, like, the outcome really comes down to, for me at least, if Ament's healthy or not. I think he adds a completely other dimension to that offense. He's a really hard player to guard one-on-one, obviously. So the Chaos defense is strictly win your matchup one-on-one, don't slide, force teams to shoot low percentage shots on Blaze, because he's obviously the best goalie in the league. So if they can get Ament back and he can kind of take advantage of that matchup, they're going to give him some looks. So if he's back, it's going to be tough. Not tough, but I think it's going to be a lot closer game than people think. And I think the Chaos offense, I think their 6-on-6 offense has to be a lot better. I think after a week of playing in the actual game speed, PLL environment, because a lot of these players came from the player pool, it'll be a lot better. They'll mesh a lot better. But I think this game is going to be really close. I really don't know who I'm going to pick to win this game yet. But I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think.
Yeah, no, and betting-wise, another low total at 22.5. Obviously, love betting those unders when Blazin's in goal. It's tough, though, at 22.5 because it's already a low total there. But more betting stuff we'll discuss on Bet on Lacrosse
later. Take the under with Blaze, man. You got to take the under with Blaze.
Yeah, you got to take the under. I know. Parker loves his unders, especially when Blaze is playing. He's got his machine that he has for predicting his picks. So definitely check out, give him a follow at ParkerBlake60 for more on that. And we'll hopefully have him on Bet on Lacrosse this week as well. And then we'll go to Cannons Atlas. This game is interesting to me. Betting-wise, Atlas 2.5-point favorites, which is very rare in the PLL. You know, you see multi-point spreads in the college game. Most pro games, it's 1.5-point spreads, kind of like, at, you know, in hockey and baseball in terms of a run line and a puck line. This is only the 10th time we've seen a team be 2.5-point favorites in the past 2 years. So that just gives you kind of, a good way of saying the Atlas are heavily favored in this game. But I'll go to you, Matt. Thoughts on the Cannons and their chances in this game, and the Atlas and how they match up against the Cannons?
Well, obviously, we all know how good the Atlas looked against the Redwoods, but I think that the Cannons, they looked good against the Water Dogs in the first half. They actually lost the second half when the Water Dogs and Jake Withers could even the face-off battle. The Cannons, they started the game against the Water Dogs. I think they were like 11 for 11 or something ridiculous like that. Stephen Kelly was having a great game. And he started off fast. They were actually up, I believe it was 2-0 before the Water Dogs even had the ball on offense. So the faceoffs in the beginning of the game, just they absolutely dominated. And then, you know, they went up 8-1 because the Water Dogs barely had the ball. The Cannons kept winning faceoffs, pushing transition, and they were just breaking down that defense. And Stephen Kelly's not going to be able to do that against Trevor Baptiste. So the Cannons, they're not going to have that advantage that they had against the Water Dogs. And I'm not sure that the Cannons will have a really great shot to win this game, especially if Stephen Kelly is the difference maker in this game, in my opinion. He needs to go like at least 40-45% against Baptiste, or else I don't think they have the greatest chance to win.
Yeah, no, and I do think this game is going to be a little bit lopsided. I just don't trust the Cannons defense enough. Hopefully they'll have Brody Merrill back in the lineup, because I think he, being the field general out there, is big, and I'm surprised they didn't start him. Maybe, Coach Gork thought he wanted to see what he had. Maybe give Brody some rest too. He's obviously getting up there and even coming off a grueling NLL season, so no worries there. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. Tyson Bell is a player. I love him in the NLL. It was a great interview when we had him on the podcast. Just hasn't impressed me so far in the PLL this past couple of years. It's just he's a little too aggressive, and that, you know, it benefits him sometimes. You obviously see him push it in transition, and it pays off sometimes. But I think that the Atlas might be targeting him this weekend, and you know, for the wrong reasons if you're the Canons. So definitely going to be interested to see. Betting wise, you know, again, not a betting podcast here, but Parker, you love your 2.5s. Did the Canons have a shot to, you know, make this a game, pull it within, you know, 2.5, make it close? Or, you know, is this one of the rare chances, times when you're actually leaning in the 2.5-point favorite direction?
I mean, I always have to lock in on the 2.5, especially after what we saw last year and how that hit. It was like, what, they missed twice, maybe? Another big thing that I noticed last year when I was doing just kind of my end of the year looking through trends and everything that happened was like a large number of the games were within a point. Like you were losing by the hook if you were taking the minus almost every single week. So, I mean, just personally, I mean, the plus was hitting almost every single game last year and the 2.5 was even more likely. So I'm always going to play a plus 2.5, whether my gut tells me to or not.
So Parker is on the 2.5 still. I'm going to go the other direction. I think, you know, the Atlas is going to be I don't want to say a blowout. There's really not many blowouts in PLO, but I do think the Atlas are going to have a big day against the Canons. And now we'll move to the final game of the weekend, Whipstakes versus the Water Dogs. Water Dogs are without Dylan Ward. Whipstakes are without Zed Williams. You know, obviously both are looking to return to form. Even though the Whips got the win, wasn't very super impressive against a depleted Chaos team. Water Dogs obviously came out stronger in the second half, but still not a complete game. Charlie, do you think both these teams kind of correct some mistakes from week one, or do we see a little bit more of the same with their absences?
I think this game's going to come down to which offense can shift quicker. Obviously, the Water Dogs, I think their offense was stale because they were watching Sours the whole time. And the Whips, they couldn't really find offense without Zed Williams dodging from the right side. So whatever coach can make the better adjustments is going to come out and win this game, because I think the Whips looked slow on both defense and offense. So same with the Water Dogs. Transition is going to play a huge factor in this game too. So I think whatever team can get out there, force unsettled situation, trap some offensive midfielders on defense, that's where the real advantage is going to come. So I really don't have a side for this game yet. I really can't put my finger on who's going to win this game. But I think whatever team can win in those two categories is going to come out victorious.
No, definitely. I think this one's an interesting one for me. I don't know either if I can pick a side, because I could see either team kind of having a big day, you know, and you could also see defenses having a big day as well. Matt, you got thoughts on this game, this Water Dogs Whips game?
Yeah, last year when the Water Dogs played the Whips in the regular season, Zed Williams didn't play, and the Water Dogs just had a really, really good game, and they beat them by, I forget the exact amount, but they beat them by a lot. And I think this Whips offense without Zed is just – it just doesn't scare me. And I think the Water Dogs will bounce back here. So, personally, I'll be taking the Water Dogs. But, yeah, I think the Whips with no Zed is a much bigger loss than the Water Dogs without Dylan Ward.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you just because I feel like goalies don't have as huge of an impact. I think, you know, definitely having Dylan Ward and Cage will get you a few more saves for sure. But – you know, he didn't have that great of a beginning of the year either. Then he really came on strong late in the season. I'm going to be interested to see if the Whipsnakes really mix it up on offense personnel wise. Obviously, you know, they have some young guys that they can kind of plug in. You know, Wheaton Jacobois didn't play, didn't dress. I just think they have a lot of attackmen converted to minis that they could play around with. We thought we were going to see more Brad Smith on attack, and we didn't see as much as we had thought, but they still have Chris Islanian, who didn't dress. He's played attack for the Denver Outlaws in previous seasons. They could move Jackson Reed around a little bit. He kind of had a nice rookie debut. Connor Kirst, you can move him to attack if you want. I don't know what they're going to do. I just think they're going to throw a little bit more different looks than what we're used to seeing. But I do expect the Water Dogs defense to play a little bit better than they did, and hopefully their offense can kind of eliminate the mistakes going into this as well. But that's going to do it for us on this episode of Pro Lacrosse Talk. I appreciate everyone hopping on with me. This is great talking. We're going to try to do this every week, like I said. Reminder, if you guys enjoy this episode and don't already subscribe to the podcast version, go ahead and subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We're going to try to do more interviews with pro players and coaches as well, like we have in the past. So they won't probably be every week, but it's still going to be a big part of Pro Lacrosse Talk going forward. And those will be on our podcast feed as well as YouTube channel. And if you're interested, too, in the gamification of pro lacrosse, you know, we have Bet on Lacrosse coming out this week. We're also working on Fantasy Lacrosse Podcast, maybe bringing that back in some capacity as well. So you kind of got a tease of that with our Fantasy Lacrosse Focus segment this week. Obviously, we're excited about PLL Player Royale and playing that every week. But I want to thank everyone for joining me. Thank you, Topher, Matt, Charlie, and Parker for joining me this week. Thank you guys all for listening. If you tune in a little bit late, you can check out the full episode on podcast on Pro Lacrosse Talk, any podcast stream. We'll also have the recording up on Twitter Spaces as well. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great week and enjoy these games this upcoming weekend.